There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Thursday, or Friday Eve, as I'm tempted to call it sometimes. Glad to have you here. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And reminder here, couple things on the list. Number one, phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. You may want to plug that into your contacts on the phone. You may not want to call today, but sometime in the future you want to call or text, you have that number. If y'all aren't from around here, that's 251-343-0106. We're glad to have you. So there's a number, website fmtalk1065.com, plus Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And speaking of Facebook, too, we have another winner in the FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Photo Contest, and this has been too much fun. I think we're in, week 14 or 15 of this, and this is your chance to put up a picture on our Facebook page of a fish. It needs to have a fish in it. It can have you in it. It can have one of your children in it. It could have a family member or friend, whatever. A fish in picture. Put it up there, and then you get your friends to hit the like button, and the picture with most likes each week wins that FM Talk 106.5 Fishing Team Dry Fit Long Sleeve T-shirt. I use them for, Dalton says it's a great yard work shirt. You can use that for whatever. It doesn't have to be fishing. I hope you do get to go, but you win that shirt. You can look at the picture of the shirt and previous winners and all that jazz on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5. And, you know, I have to say that fish and cute children often win here, okay? Now, I don't put a thumb on the scale. Y'all give the likes to the picture, and that person wins. So, congratulations to Cheryl Nelson. This is a, looks like a striper in this picture here, and she's holding the fish up, and looks like a little assistance from an adult there as well. And I got this note from Leanna, said, girls rule. Indeed, they do. The majority of the fishing pictures I've got in our home are of my daughter, not my son. I'm going to put some pressure on that boy, but congratulations, Cheryl Nelson. You won the T-shirt and this week's FM Talk 106.5 Fish and Photo Contest. So there you go.
I was going to say one more area.
There we go. I got it. Flip these switches. There we go. All right.
One more area where women are consistently better than men.
They are more patient. I'll tell you one of the other things, too. They are, and by the way, my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. in studio, they're generally, I know there are exceptions, but in the women that I have taken shooting, they're better. They should be called Mark's women, not Mark's men. And I think you take the raw product. I'm not talking about a trained guy who's shooting in a novice woman, but I'm talking about you take two novices. It seems like women end up becoming better shots more quickly or naturally. And there's been a bunch of studies about that they're not as impulsive. They're not, you know, they wait. They do these things. So
I'm sitting here cracking up through the mask, and so I'm going to have to give appropriate props to my wife, Aqualyn. Otherwise, I'll get in trouble later.
Yes.
So we've been married for about 5 years. She had never shot before. And so we had gone to a trained, you know, certified instructor so that she could learn the right way.
Right. Right?
And then, of course, I had shot qualified expert while I was in the military, et cetera,
right,
et cetera. So the very first time she ever shot as a novice blew me away.
See?
Blew me away. Wasn't even close, right? So I think she may have missed her calling.
Well, I'm telling you, the women in my world, girls in my world that have gone shooting with me,
yes,
they just, so they're in fishing and in shooting. I'm going to say, ladies, you have it. And so I agree with you. And Robert does as well. Leanna, girls do rule. Congratulations, Cheryl Nelson. All right, we got a lot to unpack and talk about here. You want to go debate first?
Do we have to?
I really don't want to. Okay, I want to. So, and if y'all have not heard Robert and I talk about this before, We're coming at this as friends, but from political angles, often that are different, but sometimes the same.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder on this one if we're going to be the same, because I wasn't proud of what happened at the debate on either side for our nation. I thought that was not good.
No, just not in the least. And I want to give somebody a little bit of a time capsule. I know during the bottom half of the hour, Representative Byrne mm-hmm. is supposed to be on the show.
Yes.
And we actually, during the 2018 election cycle, we actually did a debate on air at
right here,
106.5. Yeah. And I often reference that because of everything that I did during the 2018 cycle that was integrated, that involved both Republicans and Democrats interacting together. That was the thing I got the most consistent positive feedback on,
mm-hmm.
even when people didn't agree with what I was saying. Because they said it was the first time in contemporary times they had listened to a debate and could actually hear people debating the issues as opposed to name-calling, cutting yep. off, talking over, et cetera, et cetera. So using that as an anchor, or even what we did during the Democratic primary this year, FM Talk 106.5 in collaboration with WKRG and Kennedy for Alabama, when we ran the debate for the Democratic primary candidates, it was that same feedback coming back,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we created an environment where people could have clash on the issues. You could agree, you could disagree, but at a minimum, you could hear what they were saying.
Right.
And none of that happened the other night.
You know what I think happens here is that at some level, so campaign managers have gotten in,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you do this, and then you start having success with
right.
the with cult of personality or the assassination of the cult of personality.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, you know, you might even have a candidate that says, I don't want to do it that way.
Right.
But then the manager goes, well, then do you want to lose? I mean, you know mm-hmm. this. You've run for office.
Sure.
You know these stories. It's fundraising, and then it's how badly do you want to win?
Mm-hmm. Well, so let's touch on the fundraising first before we go back and critique the whole event. So what we established fairly early on was he said, people aren't essentially debating each other. They're debating an expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And then that expectation fuels fundraising. So from that perspective, Vice President Biden met his expectation, because what you saw in the after-debate reporting was that it was fueling his fundraising.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually had record fundraising numbers. That's decoupled from what actually happened on the stage that night,
right.
which we can clearly agree was not something that would help anybody who was undecided go to the left or go to the right.
Right. And so what Robert's telling y'all here is truth, and you watch that debate, and I don't think there's, you know, I've argued there may be 17 to 18 people in the country that are still undecided.
I think there are probably more than that, but okay.
I do that for effect, but
yes.
I don't think there's a ton of people undecided. But they've got to get, and they being the campaign apparatus for both candidates, have got to get people to the polls on mm-hmm. November 3rd, and they have to fundraise.
Yes.
And so sometimes when things go down like that, like Robert said, and I don't know President Trump's numbers, haven't looked at them, but I know that the second that the debate was over, there were emails coming in and you know, social media posts.
I think the emails were coming out before the debate even.
Well, they always come out, yeah. but I mean, these were like, hey, I just finished,
yep.
not saying that he wrote it, but
mm-hmm.
you know, fundraise. So a lot of times when these things are done, I'm not saying that there aren't stark differences. Lord knows there are. But there's a bit of, let's go through the motions, Kabuki theater, to be able to raise money.
Yes.
I mean, that's...
Mm-hmm.
But in saying that, I had my 15-year-old come in at the end of the debate. I heard her hollering in her room. It's neat that the hip thing for kids to do at 15, they're into politics.
Okay.
I wasn't as engaged at 15 years old. But she came in and asked my wife and I, what just happened, basically?
Mm-hmm.
What just happened? And that's when it really, I mean, I was goofing on it on Twitter and having
right.
a big time, but that, what just happened? And here's a 15-year-old, 3 years away from being of age of majority and being able to vote, but
right.
what just happened? And I had to take pause to tell her what just happened.
Yeah, I couldn't say on air what was going through my mind as I was actually watching that whole thing happen, but I think you really kind of hit the nail on the head, is if our young people who are going to inherit the mantles of leadership can't look at something like that and say anything other than what happened, we definitely have some problems.
All right, we'll talk about this more when we get back, and we'll try to navigate as best we can
yes.
the debate. And, of course, as we, what are we, today's the 1st of October. We're a month away from Election Day. Believe that, y'all? Month away. More of our conversation, and we'll get your texts. They're coming in right now at 343-0106, and we'll talk about tomorrow night's Kennedy for Alabama as well. Stay right there.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. 12:18 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Hanging out with my buddy Robert Kennedy Jr. Kennedy for Alabama, 6 o'clock on Friday nights. And a little preview, a little teaser tomorrow night's show.
Yes. So last week we actually had Ben Harris, who's chair of the Mobile County Democratic Executive Committee. And what he did was he just kind of laid out the entire slate of candidates, primarily Mobile County based, but also alluding to congressional candidates, senatorial candidates, and on up the ticket. This week, we're excited because we're actually expanding beyond South Alabama. We're going to have Mr. Rick Neighbors, who's a Democratic nominee for United States Congress from District 4, who's actually going to be calling in. And then from that point going forward, we'll be back to some of the Mobile-based candidates. We have Jeannie Aris, who's a county commission candidate, coming up here in a week, as well as Jill Hughes, who's a candidate for revenue commissioner. So definitely establishing Kennedy for Alabama as a place where folks can come and hear directly from the candidates, primarily on the Democratic side of the aisle, to just understand who they are and what their perspectives are going into November. So we're really excited about it.
Tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, make sure to check it out. And by the way, here's something maybe we could agree on. I'll put it in my parlance. Fill out your damn census. Now we're given another month on this. And, I mean, within Democrat ranks, are y'all talking the same thing? If we lose a congressional district, y'all.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah, and so
this is a big deal.
And this is what we talk about. So obviously on November 3rd, we're head-to-head and we're trying to win for our particular side.
Sure.
But when that's over, at the end of the day, it's better for us to have more representation in Congress, whether that representation is Republican or Democrat, than to have less.
And less money comes into the state for so many things.
Absolutely. So fill out your census, please.
Okay, from the text line here, and your fans have lined up here. That's very good. You know, Paul says, Robert is one of my favorite Democrats. So you've moved to the list, and people talk about you shooting as well. Don't listen.
Yes.
I mean, Robert and I got to have things we're lined up on. And some of those things, you know, we'll talk about on the show in the future. There's quite a few of them.
The thing that I think makes that important is that we're operating in the real world. And then there are times when we go and we represent the purely political, because that's good radio.
Right.
But we tend to find that we agree more than we disagree.
Now, I wanted this one. This is good. So, unnamed texter sent this in. This is what was in my mind when I was talking to you about it.
Okay.
About the efficacy of, let's just say, President Trump style or style of campaign so far. So, the texter says, in past debates, conservative candidates who played by the rules were generally run over by the Democrat opponent, aided by the moderator. We've seen it too many times. At least President Trump hit back and made it a point to say it appeared that he was having to debate both Biden and Wallace.
Well, so what we've talked about here consistently is that at the national level, there's a natural left lean, right? And then I've often countered that by saying when we come to local radio, particularly Alabama base, there has a tendency to be more of a conservative lane.
Sure.
The one area where I would push back last night is that the moderator was Chris Wallace from Fox News.
Right.
And so Chris has a tendency to be, he's a classically trained journalist with a journalistic history, and he tends to play it straight in a way that's different. For example, I watched Chris Cuomo last night as he interviewed Senator Ted Cruz, and that was a lot more contentious and rumble and tumble in a way that I think would have supported the texter. But what Chris Wallace was doing on Tuesday night was not that at all.
Okay, so people will say, let's look at the last part of the debate here.
Okay.
And would Donald Trump denounce white supremacists or something like, I mean, paraphrasing here. People said, listen, how many times does he have to denounce white supremacists? You know, why would Wallace, why is that question there?
That's kind of an extension of one of the issues of the day. because one of the things that's been coming out of conversations, particularly conversations on the right, has been a false equivalency between some of the Antifa movement and some of the Black Lives Matter movement. And so when you push those two things together and somehow try to equate the Black Lives Matter movement, which from a movement standpoint was the relationship between law enforcement and members of the African American community, where the member of the African community left an interaction dead, right? And so that kind
of— George Floyd.
Right, that kind of got all kind of mixed together. So when you say that and folks try to, in a false sense, equate those two things, there's a natural corollary to that, which is what is happening on the right. And what's happening on the right is typically coming under the umbrella of white nationalism or white supremacy. So the question that Chris Wallace asked was valid, to say, hey, are you willing to denounce it in the same way that you are questioning Vice President Biden on, are you willing to denounce violence at rallies? Because we know looting and rioting is never acceptable in a way that peaceful protest is. So I think the question was—
So to you, it was not— I mean, you thought it was absolutely the right question.
Well, it's a reasonable question, right? Okay. Now, the question becomes in the answer—
It's not the how long has it been since you beat your wife kind of question. Is it not a— you know what I'm saying? Is it not a setup that says, by me asking this question, that I'm intimating that you are a white supremacist or like them or something like that?
There's an element of it, but I'll give you the corollary example. So during the runoff for the Senate, we did Dr. Liu and I did a facilitation for Attorney General Jeff Sessions.
And that's Dr. Liu Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign.
Yes. And I asked him a question about, did he feel or did he understand why protest was happening, mm-hmm. right? And so what the former attorney general did was he went initially to kind of Antifa and rioting and then circled back, ultimately answering my question, but he started there, right? And so the point is, this is the world that we have created for ourselves, where we naturally start to kind of move in the direction of the gotcha, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I think is happening is because we as a population have not been more demanding on our elected officials and our facilitators, that naturally what has been rewarded is what you were talking about before, is the gotcha. Mm-hmm. And so to a certain extent, it ends up kind of infiltrating, in a way, this conversation to the negative, quite frankly.
All right. David says, Robert, I vehemently disagree with you. I commented on Twitter that that was Trump debating Joe Biden or Chris Wallace or Joe Wallace or Chris Biden. Oh, I see what you did there. That tells me at times that Wallace was inserting himself in the debate and should not have.
I'm not.
I'm just reading it, the words here.
Yeah,
That tells me at times that Wallace, or Chris Wallace, was inserting himself into the debate and shouldn't have.
I think the Chris Wallace lost control of the debate. I don't think anyone's going to argue against that. And when you're in a situation where you're starting to lose control, I think you have to insert yourself to a certain extent. Now, again, compare this to some of the other debates that we talked about. In the best of all possible worlds, in this one with Senator Sessions we were talking about here, we asked the question and then we stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And then they answered for however long you wanted to answer, and then we went on to the next question. That is a better method than what we've been seeing in presidential debates in modern era. But I'm not letting President Trump off the hook on this one, because he was inserting in both directions, and naturally that causes you as a person on the other side of that insert to respond in kind. So I think someone did a count of the number of interruptions altogether. The count was somewhere around 90, and I think President Trump initiated 71 of the 90.
Well, as we said at the end of the debate, whoever had to do the transcript of it, God bless him.
God bless him indeed.
Jason said, okay, here's what. So Jason asked, Robert, can you provide examples of the white supremacy claim? The only one I've heard of name, Richard Spencer, has endorsed Biden. Why shouldn't Biden be called to disavow his ties to Robert Byrd?
So, Vice President Biden should be called to criticize the behavior of Robert Byrd, particularly earlier in his life. What caused him to kind of get called on the carpet was the fact, I believe he may have spoke at a funeral or something like that. So, I think that critique is reasonable. However, if that is going to be the standard that we apply, that really opens us up to things like, how do we talk about George Wallace,
right,
for example, in the Wallace Tunnel, right? And so the argument from the right tends to be that a person can change over time and that we as Christians are supposed to forgive them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was Vice President Biden's impression of Senator Byrd. That's different than somebody today embracing white nationalists, white supremacist principles in contemporary times. And I think that is the distinction.
All right. I got just about a minute and a half here left. Tax return.
Tax return. Interesting. Right. I actually commented on this one on social media. I think the true story isn't tax avoidance versus tax evasion, right? Because tax avoidance is legal. Tax evasion is criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what I was seeing in the initial read of the New York Times article was tax avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
So you give everything to your accountant, you try to say, minimize my taxes, and if they're good, it's going to be as close to zero as possible. The real story that I believe is the fact that President Trump is in debt, and he has a fairly substantial debt payment that's going to become due sometime within the next few years. And if the IRS is still questioning the $72.9 million refund mm-hmm. that he got, if he ends up having to pay that back with taxes and penalties, that's another $100 million. And so the question becomes, is he susceptible to some sort of influence if some of that debt is held by foreign parties?
But now that
that's what ultimately has to be answered.
But now that everybody's watching it, seems like that's the antidote to it.
Maybe. We'll
right.
see.
Tomorrow night, Kennedy for Alabama, 6 o'clock right here at FM Talk 106.5. My friend,
talking to you, Sean. We'll talk soon, okay?
Will do.
With Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. And always good to talk to Congressman Bradley Byrne, AL1. Checking in from Washington. Thanks for your time.
Good to be with you again.
And, yeah, it's got, as always, I have a legal pad here full of questions for you. So I want to get rolling first of all, and then we'll talk about some things going on in Washington or not going on. But back here at home, let's talk about where we are with, you've met with the folks with FEMA. I got some emails today about the Small Business Administration. They had called the show the other day. What do you need? What do folks down here need to know that have been affected by Hurricane Sally for federal aid? What do we need to know?
Well, first of all, everybody's now eligible, and Mobile, Baldwin, and Escambia counties are eligible for federal assistance for individual losses. And these are primarily, what's covered is primarily household-type losses. And what you do is you go and register with FEMA, and there's a couple of different ways you do that. One is you go on disasterassistance.gov, that's their online site. There's actually a FEMA app out there you can download. Well, there's a 1-800 number, which is 1-800-621-3362. You register, and then you file a claim. Now, we've already had a lot of people doing that. So we've already had 42,000 people who've registered in those three counties, and they've already received combined almost $16 million in assistance. And that's just through the individual assistance program. We've had 2,700 people apply for federal flood insurance relief. They've gotten over $4 million. And then there are SBA loans that you can get. And so far, we've had $6.7 million paid out in that. So just in the last several days, we've already had a lot of people get some money out of this. And that's going to continue to be the case. And there are sites in Mobile, Fairhope, Foley, and Bruton that people can actually go to and sit down with a FEMA official and get whatever assistance or whatever information they need to apply for this assistance.
In a conversation I had with, somebody on from FEMA and SBA at the same time, and they didn't say it officially, and I know, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I in the conversation, it sounded like, and maybe you can give us clarity on this, if you have filed for a claim, FEMA claim, and have been denied, and they send you a letter back saying you've been denied because of this reason or that reason, it just sounded like, Congressman, it's worth appealing that denial.
I mean, I don't understand this, but
it sounds like that's the way the
denial doesn't mean denial.
Okay, y'all listen to this. This is coming from our congressman. So denial does not mean denied.
Yeah, when the FEMA administrator was down here, he told us, he says, look, our system is set up, if you don't have everything right, we'll say you're denied. But what that really means is you still have an active case with us. If you'll fill in the blank you didn't fill in, we're likely to give it to you. So no one should take denial as denial. They should continue to follow in the system. As I say, we've got 42,000 people out there that have registered, and they've already paid out $16 million to people in those three counties, and we're just at the beginning. So, no, people should need to hang in there and work with it.
Okay, because that was, I mean, that was a takeaway, because we had a lot. I mean, Lord knows, if I've heard from the big number of folks here at the station, I can imagine your office has as well. People were just very frustrated. They said, I was denied, and the person from SBA said, well, you need to appeal.
That's right, and it's not a fruitless appeal. They are granting lots of those appeals. As I say, sometimes it's just because there's some one thing that's not included in your application, and they just are using the appeal process to tell you that. And I don't like it that they do it that way,
right.
But a lot of people are following that. A lot of people are getting money.
Okay. There's the process on that. Let's also talk about what FEMA is doing with the state or with counties and municipalities, because we're talking about the cleanup, right, and how that's done when we pile stuff up out in front of the houses. Lord knows you can't drive through Mobile and Baldwin counties without dodging those big piles out on the street.
Yeah, FEMA's already approved that they will come in, and right now they're going to pay 75% of the various municipalities and counties' cost in picking up that debris. And all the municipalities and counties have long since started doing that. Now, we did request that they go up to the statutory maximum of 90%, and they've had that under consideration. But that's the go-ahead that the cities and counties needed. So FEMA doesn't actually do the picking up itself. The cities and the counties negotiate with their own private contractors, and those contractors pick it up, and they're reimbursed by the city and county. And city and county gets 75 to 90% reimbursed from the federal government.
Okay. So there anything else I'm missing on that FEMA and SBA side that people need to know?
Well, there's still the cities and the counties are still getting their information to local EMAs and to the state. So there are other categories of public assistance, like roads and bridges and all that sort of thing. So we don't have that yet, but it's sort of early in the process for us to have it. We'll get it soon enough, and we'll be working on that. If you have damage to your home that's not covered by your insurance, or and FEMA doesn't cover it, then you can get one of these loans through SBA, and I hope people will look at that. They're very low-interest loans. You can get up to $200,000 for your house if that's what you need in order to pay for the deductible or whatever. The final thing is we have a lot of people, particularly over in South Baldwin County, whose homes were destroyed or they were living in apartments where you can't live in anymore, so they're displaced. And so they are getting individual assistance through FEMA to get vouchers to go get a different place to live, et cetera, so people don't going to have to sleep in their cars. I've heard some stories of that. There's no reason for anybody to be sleeping in their cars. And if all else fails, you just dial 211. 211 puts you in touch with the various church groups and charity groups out there that are helping a whole lot of people. So there's lots of help out there for people. They just need to take advantage of it.
All right. So there's that part of it. I know we'll be getting more news as we move on in that. What about your visit? I was eyeing that and looking at the pictures coming over social media when Ag Secretary Perdue came to town. What did how'd that go, and what did you hear? I mean, I've talked to Commissioner Pate about what Alabama might or might not be able to do, but what about for our farmers in Baldwin County, Mobile County, Escambia County, that we're just getting ready to harvest cotton and now it's all laid over?
Well, we only have preliminary assessments on it, but it looks like it's 100% loss of the pecan crop, or virtually 100% loss. 30 to 50% loss of trees, pecan trees, because like so many other trees, ground was soft, hurricane winds, they blew over. So that's a big deal. There is a pilot program that some people are involved in where the Agriculture Department will come in and provide money for you to actually replant your trees. But it looks like there's going to be assistance to all these farmers because of the loss of their pecans. What I'm told right now, it looks like 30 to 50% loss in the actual quantity of the cotton crop. And the cotton crop that we didn't lose, we're going to have a 50% reduction in the quality of it, which reduces the amount of money that the farmers can get for it. It's too early to know about peanuts. They're digging them now, and we'll see if they can get them out of the ground fast enough so that they don't rot. That's the biggest problem with peanuts this time of year, is that the ground's so soggy that they rot in the ground before the farmers can pull them up. So too soon to know about peanuts, but having the secretary here was great. He already knows a lot about this stuff. He had to go through Hurricane Michael, which affected the panhandle of Florida, southeast Alabama, and his home state of Georgia. So he already knew the whole schmear about what to do and how to do it. We had a good round table with farmers, and there were individual farmers there giving him their experience, asking questions, et cetera. So I think we got a real friend in the agriculture secretary. I think he's going to do everything he can to help us.
Good. Good, because I've heard from a lot of folks, and you mentioned pecan crop and then the actual pecan trees. I had a name you would know, a well-known farmer in Baldwin County says, Baldwin County may be out of the pecan business going forward. This might have been the death knell for it. So, I mean, I hope not, but it's a man that knows what he's talking about.
Well, they took it on the chin. There's no question about it. Now, what's been happening in Baldwin County is a lot of those pecan orchards over the years have been turned into subdivisions.
Yeah, neighborhoods, yeah.
And I understand that. I think we're still going to have pecan orchards in Baldwin County. They'll get the trees up that are down and take care of the trees that are still up. And I've heard from a number of farmers that said they're going to replant. But we'll lose some. And we'll lose some because it's been so difficult, but also because they can sell that same land for these people that want to develop them. And that's just part of what's happening to Baldwin County.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Congressman Bradley Berner, guest here on Midday Mobile. Let's talk about what's going on in Washington or what's not. You and I, and you were really good and concrete with us months ago, because I've been asking you, I don't know, 16, 17 times, what's happening with the HEALS Act or the HEROES Act, or basically what's happening with maybe, stimulus money for coronavirus relief aid. And you said nothing was happening. What's changed now? I mean, there was a vote, right?
Well, the Democrats came forward with their crazy bill, and they've teed it up for a vote. They were going to vote on it last night, and they pulled it. So the bill that's out there is a bill that's not real. It has no chance of passing in the Senate, and the president's not going to sign it. But there are serious discussions underway between the Secretary of the Treasury, Mnuchin, and Pelosi. And Pelosi hasn't budged yet, but they're still talking. Apparently, Mnuchin put an offer on the table yesterday that was a pretty big increase over the $1 trillion that had been discussed previously. And we'll see if that entices Pelosi to come down or not. I'm not hopeful, to be honest with you.
Okay.
If she's still playing games, and they're playing games right now. Some of the votes they've teed up today are, I don't know why we're dealing with some of these things in the middle of a pandemic, but we are. We got a resolution today to condemn QAnon, which, in the middle of a pandemic, why we're even talking about QAnon, I do not know.
And what does a resolution to condemn do?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay. Right. Just wanted to check. Duly noted. All right. that's stuff y'all are supposed to be doing when you don't have anything else to do, Congressman.
Well, Pelosi likes to do lots of symbolic things. She doesn't like to do substance. And so we do lots of what we call messaging bills, where she throws them out there so she can send a message to whomever she thinks she needs to send a message to. And I'm not against messaging bills. Sometimes you need to do messaging bills. But that's basically all we do under her leadership, is messaging bills. I'd rather be sitting down and have a serious discussion about what more we can do to help people with the pandemic. And, oh, by the way, I hope with wildfires and hurricanes we don't deplete our emergency fund, because we're going to need this money to help people that really need help. So you may find after the election, when we come back, that there will be this sort of race to get a bunch of substantive things done, because we haven't done them earlier in the year.
Because of November 3rd.
Because of November 3rd. She reckons that chaos and lack of real progress on things is somehow going to help her and the people she's got running these various House races around the country.
Okay, I think that's worth explaining to some people, too, that there's one part of this that is directly associated with the presidential election, but to give cover or help out folks in other races, how does that work?
Well, she knows which one of her Democratic House members are in trouble, and then she's got some that are in trouble. They're mainly people that were elected from districts that voted for President Trump 4 years ago. She's also got some seats that she's trying to pick up from us that we presently hold, and she knows that those are tough races. So what their argument is that Republicans are just about shutting things down, about not negotiating, even though that's not true. And mainly their message this year appears to be about health care. They think that's their winning ticket. So she's going to say the reason we don't have more progress on COVID, the reason we don't have more progress on health care, is because of the intransigence of the Republicans and the fact that President Trump just wants to fight, doesn't want to negotiate with anybody. It's not true, but she's trying to bank on that. And in some of those swing districts, she thinks that will help with some of the undecided voters. That's not what I'm hearing from our candidates, from our House members that she may be trying to pick up. But that's what she thinks, and she's obviously got polling that tells her that.
So, I mean, trying to just look at this tactically, how much do you sacrifice on that side that she would lose in the president? It seems like she would want because Democrats, you worry about, okay, she's not going to let something get done because it'll be a win for President Trump before Election Day. But it's the part, Joe Biden said in the debate the other night that he is the Democrat Party, which, yeah, I imagine had people running like they were in a Godzilla movie at DNC headquarters. But he is so therefore, whatever is done or not done by Speaker Pelosi, I would argue, is embodied in their candidate for president.
Well, she thinks that the voters sit there and say, I blame the Republicans or I blame the Democrats. The truth of the matter is the voters look up here and say, I blame everybody. I blame the whole damn smear. And so I do think it's bad for her incumbents that are in tough races. I don't think it helps Joe Biden. But, you know, she's got her brain trust over there, and that's what they're doing. Now, this may change literally today. She may come forward and we actually have a negotiation, we get a bill. But I just got to tell you, even though they're having serious discussions, I'm not hopeful.
All right. So that's do not hold our breath on that. And what does that also mean for businesses here? Because I wonder about that with PPP and other things. Because at least here in Alabama, you know, I mean, we're not at the super great rate we were for unemployment before the pandemic, but we look pretty decent. I'm being careful because I don't want to overstate something if somebody still is not working because of, you know, what's happening with the mandates and lockdowns, but we're in a lot better situation than we were in Alabama on unemployment.
Well, at the end of August, our unemployment rate was 5.6% in the state of Alabama. State government ended its fiscal year yesterday, and they ended in the black. Okay? Contrast that with New York City. New York City has three times the unemployment rate of the state of Alabama, and they're running deficits, huge deficits, because they wouldn't bring their economy back. We brought our economy back. Not exactly. It's not all the way where it was before, obviously, but we brought it largely back. We've brought our students back to school. We're playing high school football. We do not have a spike in the disease in Alabama. I mean, what we're doing is working. What they're doing in some of these blue states and cities is failing. And so, you know, some of this money that she wants is for cities and states, city and state governments. Well, Alabama would love to have some more money, don't get me wrong. But they ended the fiscal year yesterday in the black. So that shows when you have good fiscal management, you can get to this thing. And when you make good, sound decisions for the health of your people and for the economy, that you can get through this thing. That these blue places just won't do it. And because they won't do it, they've got major economic problems, and they're not doing any better with the disease than we are.
The gut reaction, I think, of citizens watching that would be, you know, back to the ant and the grasshopper parable or something to that, right? That these states that made the right decisions, cut where they had to cut, it might have been tough, but were fiscally responsible, they sit there and say, well, why are you going to bail out that state? They had just as much a chance, and let me add, higher tax revenue coming in to balance their budget, but they didn't. So why did they get bailed out?
Because they're banking on Joe Biden getting to be president, that you have a Democratic House and Democratic Senate, and they won't have to do the things that our state government had to do. They'll just have the federal government, Uncle Sam, just come give them a big check. I just think that's ridiculous. I applaud the way our state government has handled this. I applaud what's happening with our economy. I applaud the fact that we're not seeing a spike in the disease in Alabama. And I don't think Alabamians should be paying tax dollars to bail out state governments and city governments that have made, not just during this thing, but for years, bad decisions. I don't think we should do that. So that, and that's a big part of the discussion that's going on now between Pelosi and the Secretary of Treasury, because, you know, I don't think any Republicans want to do that.
What are, before we wrap up here, feelings on, because I've heard a lot of discussion now, you know, you have to have a different take to get on cable news, right, with your hot take on this, that, or the other. And one of the hot takes that's been going on is if President Trump wins on November 3rd or 4th or 5th, or we can get in that discussion when that would be decided, but that the Republicans will take the House. Now, I haven't seen that, but you're our congressman. You're there. Is that pie in the? It seems pie in the sky to be congressman.
I wouldn't call it pie in the sky. I think that it's less likely than it won't happen. I think it's an uphill climb for us. But if the president performed well enough in some of those swing districts I referred to, yeah, we could take it back. We only need a gain of 18 seats. And if he overperformed in those 18 districts, we would take the House back. And that would be a slim majority, don't get me wrong. Slim majorities are problematic, let me tell you. But I wouldn't say today that it's more likely than not, but by the end of this month, we may have a different situation.
All right. I'm going to be watching it and appreciate the update and be talking to you a lot more between now and Election Day.
Looking forward to it.
Always a pleasure. Congressman Bradley Byrne joining us right here on Midday Mobile. All right, 12:53. We're coming right back. Grab some calls and text at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. Coming up next hour, Ken Grimes with the City of Orange Beach, but let's just say homeowner Ken Grimes is going to join us, plus Brian Murphy Roofing is going to join us as well. We're going to talk about what they've seen from Hurricane Sally and those roofs that were fortified. Remember years ago, we talked so many times about fortified roofs on this show. What's the story? How did they do in Hurricane Sally? We'll talk about that and talk about the process of installing those. Also, a heads up too, my Spanish Fort people, be seeing y'all tonight. Spanish Fort Council Chambers, as I will be moderating the Spanish Fort mayoral debate. That starts at 6 o'clock tonight. They told me 6, and we would be finished. It says here, we would be finished by 7 o'clock. So you got time to come out and check that out. Be moderating the debate between incumbent Mike McMillan and challenger Rebecca Cornelius and some council folks as well. That starts at 6 tonight in Spanish Fort.